Are Kyrie and James Harden going to sign their extension?
His trade value is not there. And when you hear reports...
Phil has been paid $16 million of his $33 million salary.
I know about people that have certain clauses
what
in their contract.
What happens next year with Giannis Antetokounmpo? He will be eligible for a Supermax next summer. If he re-signs, a new reality is the players are going to move around. And the players are not going to want to spend their whole, you know, life...
And because they didn't want to go into the penalty of the luxury tax, they traded James Harden. Somebody's going to be making $50 million.
He probably could have made a little bit more money this summer in free agency.
I think he could have got a lot more in the offseason. When you got a chance to secure the bag,
you secure it, man.
No question.
What's going on, party people? This is another episode of the Bird Rights Podcast. As you guys know, I am here with Corbin. As we are, I think this is episode 11 now of our 30-team offseason preview. Where we're doing off-season previews for each NBA team. We are here with, you guys, if you're familiar with my work, you definitely know him, John Simpson. He is my co-host of the One and Done podcast. John is a Hornets fan, unfortunately for him. It's been a rough little bit for the Hornets. And if you guys don't know, Corbin was doing the Sports Ethos Hornets show. So, obviously... has great familiarity with them too.
Yep. Excited about that. I have a thing to tell. I'm going to tell you this later. We're still doing Hornets related stuff in a different capacity. So yes, I'm very excited about this.
So yeah. So given John and Corbin's familiarity with the Hornets, I admittedly haven't watched nearly as much Charlotte Hornets basketball as I would like to admit. I thought it'd be good to, you know, bounce ideas off each other. So Corbin, first of all, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Excited to talk basketball as always. First with Steven, obviously John meeting you and a fan of the show that y'all do. So yeah, let's get it. I mean, I'm pumped. I'm good.
John, obviously we do the One and Done podcast together where we talk college basketball. This, I think, is your first podcast talking NBA, if I'm not mistaken. So how are you doing?
I've actually got a secret podcast about the NBA I haven't been telling you about.
Damn.
It's very wildly popular. No. It's quite literally getting the call up to the big leagues. So I'm excited to talk about the Hornets. I'm shamefully, eternally optimistic when it comes to Hornets basketball, and I think this might be our year. So I'm ready to get to cracking.
So there might be some things to be optimistic about. Obviously, LaMelo Ball, obviously nagging ankle injuries the last 2 years now. But if he could stay on the court, Brandon Miller, you know, he looks the part. Like, it looks like it's to the point where I'm almost convinced that he was the right pick over Scoot Henderson. And I was adamantly on the Scoot Henderson train over Brandon Miller. But with the way Brandon Miller looks, it's hard to dispute right now that, you know, they made a mistake at number two, which clearly it seems like they did not do. Let's start with that real quick. John, do you think the Hornets, obviously we still have the whole careers to play out, but as of now, do you think the Hornets made the right pick taking Brandon Miller over Scoot Henderson?
Yeah, I think they do. And I was kind of in that same court that a lot of us were in, thinking that, you know, oh, you can't draft for fit, draft for talent. Scoot Henderson's the second place back, you know, in the draft. He'd have been the number one pick in most drafts if Wimby wasn't there and all that kind of stuff, you know. And then, but I'll tell you, I think that maybe some recency bias on some other guys has got us a little critical on these draft picks when they come out of college, especially because Brandon Miller did last year in his rookie year what he did most of the year at Alabama the year before. You know, and then you've got this 19-year-old kid who's going through court cases and guys facing murder charges and all this kind of stuff, and he's getting all the scrutiny and the, you know, NCAA tournament, and then all of a sudden, you know, he kind of looks like his head's not in the game, and I think we kind of went too hard on him for it. He's our guy. He was Cliff's guy. Cliff wanted Brandon Miller, you know, and it looks like he's the guy, you know, he's playing the part. He got, you know, I think he had a great rookie year and kind of what that team needed.
And we're going to talk about Steve Clifford, obviously, because the one thing I didn't put in the show notes is the fact that, you know, by the time this episode releases, the Hornets may have a new coach. Corbin, what do you think in terms of the Brandon Miller versus Scoot Henderson debate? I mean, at this point, Miller came in third in Rookie of the Year voting. It seems like so far through the one-year sample size, they made the right pick. But just in terms of how the roster is constructed and how Miller's played, do you think, you know, that they made the right call at this point?
I mean, I was definitely on team Scoot, like hard, right? Yeah. And I liked Brandon Miller, but I just, I mean, I my takes have not aged well. I compared him to a much hyped 2024 version of Wesley Johnson. Obviously, no, like he's been a lot better than that. And Scoot also was a lot worse than I expected, even considering that, you know, rookie guards, like it's a tough, tough learning curve, right? With that being said, yeah, I mean, credit to Brandon Miller for really playing well, you know, showing poise, you know, knocking down his threes at a high clip, being able to kind of do a little bit off ball, not a whole lot, but a little bit more than he was, right? And Scoot, I think it's understated. He definitely rounded into form a little bit later toward the end of the year, but it was rough to begin with. Do I think they made the right call or the wrong call? Still too early to tell in my mind. I think Scoot was worse than we expected, but I didn't expect him to be like a trailblazer. I didn't expect him to be blazing, you know, the rookie race out in Portland. And Brandon Miller played exceptionally well, but I don't know if like that we haven't seen the best of Scoot. When I see the best of Scoot and Brandon, I think we can compare it a little bit better. At this point in time, it was a wash anyway, right? Like LaMelo wasn't there. So let's say Scoot was there in place of LaMelo and Scoot plays as bad as he does, then obviously he looks worse, right? If Brandon plays well in Portland, it for this season alone, I think the right decision was made. I think the jury is still out on whether it was the right decision moving forward. But as of right now, like Miller definitely didn't disappoint. Let's say that. Like you look at him now and you're like, hey, like I could see him fitting on this team. And those who were haters or more outspoken detractors of that are a little humble now.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. Okay, before we talk about this year's NBA draft, where the Hornets are guaranteed a top 7 pick, let's quickly talk about the coaching search. It seems like, unless there's, you know, a dark horse candidate that emerges, seems like it's between Charles Lee and J.J. Redick. The interesting thing about J.J. Redick is that he has that podcast with LeBron James, and people are anticipating J.J. Redick could get the Lakers job. Now, J.J. Redick may have a decision to make. The Hornets could give him an ultimatum. They might say, okay, either take this job now or interview for the Lakers and hope you get it. But we'll give you a coaching opportunity right now. I don't know. But between Charles Lee, J.J. Redick, I'm surprised Kenny Atkinson's not really being considered again, given they hired him last time they hired a coach. But I guess given how we spurned them, maybe they're just not interested anymore. But John, how do you think this head coaching job resolves itself?
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing is about that is that Kenny Atkinson isn't really being considered for other jobs either.
I saw Shane's tweet that he's considered for the Lakers job, but I don't think he's like a front runner by any means.
Yeah, not at all.
Yeah, so, you know, I think maybe that kind of – I don't blame him, you know, after you know, how they were talking about him not having the money to hire assistant. Stuff like that, you know, which has kind of been a common problem in that front office prior to new ownership and kind of stuff that's going on. But I agree with you. I think, you know, they just today came out, you know, where they said that, you know, they're making headway on a new coach. I know they wanted it before the lottery. I kind of agree with you. I think that it seems like the rumblings are that, you know, at first it was like it's going to be Charles Lee. It's Charles Lee's job, you know, and they're just kind of doing interviews. And then, you know, kind of switched to, well, they love JJ. Ownership loves JJ. Front office loves JJ. They want to bring JJ in. So it would be interesting to see. I'd be fine with either one of those guys, to be honest. I think neither one of those guys would be a bad hire. I think you kind of might have hit the nail on the head in the sense of them offering the job to JJ and saying, you know, you can go interview for the Lakers and see if you get it or not. Also, he might interview for the Lakers and get the job, and LeBron might fire him halfway through the season. So it's a real thing. You know, it's a real thing.
So what worries me with Charles Lee, and again, I can't hold what other coaches did against him, obviously, but either way, this is going to be a first-time head coach. And we saw what happened with Darvin Ham, Corbin. I hate to bring that up to you as a Lakers fan. And we saw it happen with Adrian Griffin with the Bucks. Those were the two most highly touted assistant coaches to be like the next big thing in terms of a head coach, and both of them flamed out in their first stops. On the contrary, Will Hardy for the Utah Jazz is phenomenal. And he was probably the next guy after both of them. So it's like Charles Lee, Sam Cassell. Those are the next guys up now. And I'm just hoping, obviously, I can't hold Griffin and Ham against what they... I mean, Griffin and Ham both had some success, too. Griffin was 30-13 when he got fired. Ham won the playing tournaments and made the conference finals last year.
So and the in-season tournament this year.
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant. I meant to say in-season.
I figured, okay.
I'm never going to, you know, get those two straightened out. But, yeah, exactly. They won the playing, too, technically. So, I mean, those coaches did have some success, but I can't hold that against Charles Lee, really. I mean, that would be ridiculous.
Yeah, well, being a 76ers fan or a Lakers fan, you got to understand being in a small market, you got to kind of, you got to take some chances. You got to roll the dice on some guys. You know, you're not going to pull the big name coaches, the Charlotte, you know, coaches team out of the rubble that they've been left in. You know, I think that, my hot take, I would take Darvin Ham or Adrian Griffin as a coach on this team. You know, I think they're both good coaches. You know, I think it's a little bit different coming to this Charlotte team. It's kind of young. You know, there is some star power, but not like superstar power veterans. Like, you know, you're not walking into Giannis and, you know, or LeBron or teams like this, you know, that have multiple stars on this team, established veterans, stuff like that. I think it's a little bit different situation that a new coach would be walking into. Probably a lot more coach friendly. And I think the Leafs is going to be a lot more for a coach coming into this issue. Steve Clifford got an extra year. You know, so
Steve Clifford got an extra job. I mean, you talk about how Charlotte has to take chances on a coach. They did the opposite when they rehired Clifford after letting go of Borrego. So that's now I think Charlotte has to roll the dice now that you kind of have the infrastructure of young talent in place. Corbin, anything to add on any of the coaching candidates, or should we move on to the draft?
I'm down to move on to the draft. I think you're right. Apparently, ownership was interviewed today at like a golfing tournament, and they said, you know, that they kind of already have someone in mind and they're not really waiting. So, like, you know, like John said, we'll see what that looks like. I mean, at this point, not a whole lot more to add. I think any new coach would be great. I'm glad Steve Clifford is still there as an advisor. I think he should have been one to begin with and not, you know, an actual coach for this team just because of where they are developmentally and where he is as a coach or rather as an advisor now. So, yeah, I think you're right. Moving forward, if the coaching is already kind of well in hand, I think the draft is the next big domino to fall.
Okay, so as I said, the Hornets are guaranteed a top 7 pick. They have the 3rd best lottery odds. Quickly, I'll run down, you know, the odds for each pick. Number 1, 13.3. Number 2, 12.9. Number 3, 12.4. Number 4, 11.7. Number 5 pick, 15.3. Number 6 pick, 27.1. And number 7 pick, 7.4. They also have pick 42 in the draft. So, Corbin, let's start with you on this one. If you're the Hornets, I don't think it's a huge deal if you win the lottery or not. Like, unless you won Alex Saar, I don't think it's that big of a deal if you get 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I don't think it's that big of a difference in this class. So where do you stand? I mean, if the Hornets get number 1, where do you go? You have to take Alex Saar, right?
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing about this draft class, I don't think there's a clear number 1. So Saar, I guess, has the highest. I mean, he's the closest thing to that with the blend of potential and, I guess, like realized production with what he's done so far. Ideally, I guess I'd want them to kind of slip maybe. I mean, you want number 1 in general. And I think Saar could work with Mark Williams. I don't know. I'm not the biggest Saar fan in terms of him being like the best. Like, I think there's a reasonable chance he comes out and he's not the best player in this draft class. Like, I think that's a more than reasonable shot that's the case. And I don't feel comfortable drafting that guy who's that big a question mark number 1. That's just my take.
So I have Saar number 2 on my board. He's starting to really become a consensus guy for a lot of people. I'm starting to see a lot of smart people having Saar number 1 and actually Ron Holland number 2. John and I talk about this all the time. I already know John is going to say when I ask him, he wants Stephon Castle. I don't know if that's his number 1 option, but I know John. Stephon Castle number 1 on my board for what it's worth.
Oh, wow.
John, where do you stand with the Hornets in terms of if they get number 1 pick?
First of all, that would be the most Hornet thing ever for them to get the number 1 pick in this draft. Especially after having having that shot at getting the number one pick last year. Yeah. Being sitting there watching the thing like, oh my gosh, we're getting ready to get them.
It would be the worst.
But, you know, I think, first of all, if you get number one pick, then you try to see if anybody else wants. I think that, you know, they can probably find a good draft. Maybe you can find a trade partner for somebody that fell in love with Sarr. You know, if not, then I wouldn't have a problem with him being Sarr if they think that he's the best talent in the draft. Now, something about bringing Cliff. Cliff is a great talent evaluator. He's been behind a lot of the, you know, some of the players they drafted. He pounded the table for Brandon Miller. Apparently, back in the day, he was pounding the table for Donovan Mitchell, and they didn't end up not drafting him. So he's a good talent evaluator. He's what they want there. But I would love Stephon Castle on this team. He's a good basketball player. I love Stephon Castle. I love a lot of his game. It's going to really translate well in the NBA. I think that he would kind of feel the need on that team. But, you know, you don't draft fit. So, you know, maybe you take Sarr number one. I think after that, then it's kind of up in the air. I wouldn't hate Ron Holland on this team. You know, I think he could bring something to this team. He has the potential. A lot of these guys are kind of potential guys anyway. And then, you know, I love Topic in this draft.
Dillingham. I was gonna say Dillingham.
Billy's my dude, man. Yeah.
Same. I'm a big Dillingham fan.
Yeah, he's got the twitch. He's got a great shot. You know, he's good with the ball in his hand. I mean, he's another kind of thing that they're missing, though. If he's a sixth man on this, right? You know, like, that's a nice roster. If he's going to come in some night, he's going to score 30. Yeah. I think he has a lot of potential to grow. You know how I feel about a Kentucky guard.
So let's say it's Dillingham. Let's say the starting five, assuming health, you have LaMelo. You have probably Trey Mann starting at the two to give a little bit more playmaking, similar to what Terry Ozier provided. Then you have Brandon Miller. Let's say Miles Bridges is back, which unfortunately we are going to have to discuss today. In terms of, obviously, there's a human side of everything with Miles Bridges as well, but we will have to talk about what the Hornets do. And Mark Williams. I mean, with Dillingham as a sixth man, I mean, that's a pretty good squad. That's a young squad. That's an exciting squad. And I think, obviously, if you have the chance to coach the Lakers, J.J. Redick specifically, you're going to coach the Lakers. But, like, I'm kind of high on that Charlotte job. If I'm off that job, I'm intrigued. If I'm, like, Charles Lee, or even if I'm J.J. Redick, I don't want to risk, you know, the Lakers passing me by. But that's where I'm at. So, okay. Anything else to add in the draft from either of you guys, or are we good? I know we didn't talk about Ricochet much. We didn't talk about Cody Williams much.
I was going to ask, how do you feel about those two players? Because, like, I like both. I think both have flaws. I think Ricochet, I don't see a lot of on-the-ball juice. Like, it's a lot of shooting, and even that's faded some the last couple months. But, like, in terms of somebody who creates, I don't see a lot of that. At the same time, that he had 6'9", almost 6'10". If he's a 3-and-D guy, I won't draft that number one or number two. But if it's in this draft class and I give him number five, I'm not super mad. I mean, I'm disappointed, but I'm not mad, right? And then if you go to Cody Williams, I mean, good length, defensive aptitude, right? Looks like there's flashes of being like a ball handler and creator, but the shooting's an issue. Like, low volume, don't really like what it looks like when he does take it. You know, it's kind of weird. So what do y'all think about either of those guys? Because I do think we got to address them. They are in play for Charlotte.
I think if you are going to take Cody Williams, you're banking on Brandon Miller becoming an elite, like, top. Like, he's a good shooter. But I'm saying, like, if you have LaMelo, who, yes, he has range, but he isn't efficient, and then you have Brandon Miller and Cody Williams starting as your forwards, you're going to need Brandon Miller to basically be a elite level shooter. If not, then you're going to have to sign a two guard, like, I don't know, Luke Kennard's out there this summer. We're going to talk about him for Charlotte. But, like, just to have some type of shooting around Cody Williams and LaMelo, and Mark Williams is a non-shooter. So that's where it gets tricky, that like you'd have to make that squad work with the future big three of LaMelo, Cody, and Brandon Miller. You'd have to have shooting around them. And maybe that even makes Mark Williams expendable for like a stretch five or something. Like maybe somehow you trade Mark Williams for, I don't know, the 20th pick in draft Khalil Ware or something, just to get some more spacing. That's where it gets tricky. I don't want to have to, you know, have too many cooks in the kitchen in terms of not being able to shoot. Ricochet, I do think the shooting is legit. I know he's on a cold streak right now, but again, he provides the three, he provides the D. I think that would be more of a Charlotte pick. Cody Williams, though, they had Gordon Hayward for 4 years. Cody Williams does remind me a lot of like a young Gordon Hayward in terms of, you know, the ball handling. He's a little bit longer at better on defense, but I'm saying in terms of like the creation and on ball ability for someone his size, similar to Gordon Hayward or Butler, in my opinion. John, anything to add on either Cody Williams or Ricochet?
No, I think that, you know, like you both said, if you get those guys at 5, 6, 7, kind of got to put Modest Pedulis in that too.
Ubizalis is a good one too.
Another good one, yeah. If he's in that area, yeah, you know.
I almost prefer him at Charlotte over those two.
Okay, yeah. No, that's a good one that we didn't even address. Okay. So Charlotte, in terms of their own free agents, Davis Bertans has $5.5 million guaranteed of $16 million. I assume if they can't trade him, they'll waive it and open up that extra $11 million cap space. Miles Bridges is a free agent, which none of us really have any clue what that market's going to look like, so I don't want to speculate on it. Then you have Seth Curry, Poku, Bryce McGowns, and JT Thor, all non-guaranteed. So they could either get rid of all four of them, they could keep all four of them. I have Charlotte having a potential upwards of $28 million in cap space. I believe I factored in they let go of Seth Curry, Poku, Bryce McGowns, and JT Thor, but that does factor in Miles Bridges' cap hold. So, John, out of all these guys, who do you want to see back out of that group of the potential free agents?
None of them. I want to see maybe JT Thor.
Okay. I'd like Bryce McGowns. You know I've been high on Bryce McGowns.
Yeah, but I think they're playing. I think they're playing the house. I think the whole plan all along is my plan.
So then, what about Miles Bridges? And again, I understand the touchy subject of the nature of it, but I'm saying in terms of the play on the court, what do you think? You know, they would and should do with Bridges.
Oh, Bridges,
he's back.
He's back. Oh yeah.
I think he's back because I don't think anyone's going to offer him whatever Charlotte.
That only that he wants to be back. He said multiple times, I want to be in Charlotte. I want to be like one of those guys that played for the same team for their whole career and all this like that. And I think that, you know, he kind of feels like Charlotte did him a solid, you know, whatever you want to think about that. But in, you know, the way they handled the situation and coming back, I think the reason they interviewed a bunch of women head coaches is because they're going to bring back Miles Bridges and they kind of wanted to cover themselves a little bit in the press, you know.
Yeah.
You know, well, given all his off the court stuff.
Well, so everything
points to them coming free.
What I will note is that since he signed the qualifying offer this past year, he had a no trade clause for the 1 year, and he could have went to the Suns. He could have went anywhere, and he didn't want to waive that no trade clause. He wanted to stick around in Charlotte for the remainder of the year. I think a lot of that does have to do just strategically. His agent's probably advising him that because Charlotte would be the only team to have his bird rights. If he got traded, no team would have his bird rights, and then he'd have to settle for probably mid-level exception money. So I don't know how much that has to do with him wanting to be in Charlotte or how much it has to do with, okay, financially, even if it's a sign-in trade, having a team control my bird rights makes the most sense. It'll be interesting to see. Corbin, I know you and I have briefly discussed Bridges on here in the past. I know it's a subject that neither of us enjoy talking about. So if you want to plead the fifth, you could plead the fifth. What do you stand with the Bridges and Hornets situation?
I mean, I'm with John, I guess, a little bit more trepidation because all the people who, I mean, it takes two to tango in this, right? Like, yeah. Bridges wants to be back. He had the leverage and the agency during the trade deadline. That's past. He got what he wanted. He wasn't traded, right? Now he's a free agent, right? And who knows? You have a new coach, new front office. Maybe they say no. So I do think that if it was the same front office, I would say he's definitely back because why not, right? Like they brought him back. They didn't make any like sweeping proclamation about how this wasn't allowed, yada yada. they were, by all accounts, okay with it, right? We don't know this new front office yet. Now, if they bring him back, I mean, we have an inkling that more than likely they might lean that way. But honestly, we don't know, right? So I think there's something to be considered there. How does Jeff Peterson look at that? I haven't heard anything about that yet, right? So I think that is something that's going to be interesting to kind of see. This is more or less a blank slate than we've ever seen from the Charlotte Hornets as it replies to Miles Bridges. So I think it's just something to consider.
It's not just a new front office, it's also new ownership. Because no,
that's Jordan, what I meant. I kept saying my mistake. That's what I meant to say. I kept saying new front. I meant to say new. Yep. Well, top down. Everything's different. Well? It is. That's what I'm saying. New ownership. It's new front office. Mitch Kupchak's an advisor. And so is Clifford, which again, they're advising. So who knows? They might. It depends how much say they have, right? But at the same time, the fact that these new guys are not just brand new in the NBA world, they've been, you know, Jeff Peterson, Atlanta, Brooklyn. Like, they have experience. I think they'll have a lot more agency in their own decision. So I think that's something to consider. And as far as the free agents, to answer your earlier question, listen, I think JT has some potential. I'm not going to lie. I get the $5 million only is guaranteed for Davis Bertans. I think if you can move him, great. But honestly, he played well for Charlotte. And by played well, he did the one thing he always does. He just actually did it well for Charlotte, which is make threes, right? I thought he actually played some decent defense, actually. It was kind of funny. It was a little bit of a midseason resurgence for him and all the guys who came over. But honestly, I mean, here's my thing. Like, I think it's probably best salary contract-wise. I'm not the front office expert, but I feel like they should operate as an over-the-tax team. Like, if you open up a space, what are you opening up for exactly?
Let's talk about it.
Okay.
So, you're right. They could operate as an over-the-cap team where they would have the biannual exception, which is about $5 million, and the mid-level exception, which is about $12.8 million.
Exactly.
If they could open up around the $28 million that I calculated, these are their options. And both of you guys should have this list in front of you from the show notes. I think they first go after the restricted free agent route, like try to pull away like an Obi Toppin or Patrick Williams or Sadiq Bey, even like a Max Christie, someone like that. I mean, the Pacers are going to have to pay Siakam big money. Are they really going to be comfortable matching a pretty hefty Obi Toppin contract too? I would love Obi Toppin in Charlotte. I would love it.
I would like it. I think he'd be an interesting fit there. I don't know if he's worth breaking the bank for. In fact, he's not worth breaking the bank for.
Offer him starting at $16 million a year for 4 years. That's $64 million. Is that something you're interested in? The look on your face makes me think
no. No, I mean, it just, I have to separate the production I've seen. Like, he's played well in Indiana, right? With $64 million to Obi Toppin. Like, kind of balancing those two is tough for me right now. But, I think that's decent. I think you still have Grant Williams there, right? So, like, you have to figure out, like, are you paying Obi Toppin to be the starter and having Grant come off the bench? Like, that's a lot of money to invest to a player if he's not a surefire starter. That's just my question. Obi Toppin, although his rebounding has been better, rebounding defense are kind of his issues, right? And so that is something you have to consider. So I think the context is there. 64 in a vacuum for a guy like Obi, sure. You know, running the break with the Melo, being a good power forward, you know, filling the lanes, that's great. But you got to think about the money you're spending for what role he's going to play. That's the question I guess I throw back at you, Steve. And you as well, John. Sorry, I'm just throwing it out here.
Okay. And then, John, you could give your take on Obi Toppin, but what about Patrick Williams? Let's say starting at like $23 million a year, because I think the Bulls might match that. I think the Bulls might, if it's less than $100 million for Patrick Williams, I think the Bulls might match.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, the thing about it is, you know, we talk again, small market teams, like they're going to have to overpay to get the guys that they want. Mm-hmm. Right. Because guys are going to go other places on even lesser contracts. You know, we've seen it before. Rather than come to Charlotte, especially to pull a team on an RFA. So it's going to be hard to do that. You're going to have to overpay somebody, I think, to get them to come like that. Either one. Again, like on Obi, I don't know that he really fills that big of a role to where you're willing to commit that much money over that amount of time to him.
What about that money to Sadiq Bey?
Atlanta's I like Sadiq Bey a little bit more on that team. And I like the defense.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing that Obi Toppin doesn't have.
And the shooting with Sadiq Bey as well.
And the shooting. And he's got a relationship with Atlanta, you know, and we have Atlanta ownership. So You know, I would like Sadiq Bey, I think, on that team. I think that'd be a lot better. I think he would bring a lot to that, especially considering, like, other than, you know, looking at the draft, unless you draft Stephon Castle, you're probably not bringing in a whole lot of defense through the draft.
Yeah. And even so, there's usually a learning curve with rookies in terms of
exactly
defense. Otherwise, a few other guys I have on here. Najee Marshall is a guy Corbin and I have been talking about every episode, just because someone's going to give him mid-level exception money. Someone's giving Najee Marshall the full mid-level. DeAnthony Melton, like him, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they need, like, the 3-and-D type bigger wing. Like, I had DeAnthony Melton on here. I know he's not bigger. Like, he's a guard, but he's a good 3-and-D guy. I put D'Angelo Russell and Markel Fultz on this list if they want to play alongside LaMelo in, like, that Ruggiero role, if the Hornets want to take a flyer on one of those two guys. Otherwise, that's really what I envision. I envision the Hornets throwing a bag at either Obi Toppin, Sadiq Bey, and hoping those guys don't match that have their restricted rights. I could see a Markel Fultz. I could see a D'Angelo Russell. Malik Monk reunion, I think it was such a disaster the first time that even though he's a completely different player now, Malik Monk's
also
here, and the Hornets, I can't envision giving him up.
Completely different ownership again.
That's right.
Yeah. George's still lurking around there.
Somewhere in the shadows. Jumpman, you know.
Yeah.
Even like a Kyle Anderson. The Timberwolves, we don't know what's going on with their ownership. Even if, you know, they make a deep title run this year, they have Naz Reid paid, they have Cat paid, and they have Gobert paid. It makes Lomo a little bit expendable in terms of, like, playing the four for them. So, yeah, I like a lot of these guys. I would say Isaac Okoro as well for the defense. I just don't think the Hornets could take on another non-shooter unless they're going to draft, like, Donna Connect or someone. I think it's too tough. So, yeah, I like a lot of these options. So, to answer Corbin's question of if they're going to operate as over the cap team, I think if they think they could get one of these guys, I think it makes sense to, you know, try to get under the tax, get the $25-plus million in cap space, and the $8 million room exception as well they have. So, you could get, you know, multiple guys with that.
And new ownership has stated publicly that they are willing to spend money to make this team better. They want this team to win. You know, that the Hornets have been a notoriously cheap team for the past several years, you know, but, you know, these guys want to spend money and they want to make this team better and they want to fill seats and they want to win games. So it's hard to predict. It's hard for me to even comprehend as a Charlotte Hornets, lifelong Charlotte Hornets fan, you know, but it'll be interesting to see. I think this offseason is going to give us a really clear idea about where the direction of this team is going. It's going to be fun.
Okay, now let's talk about a few trade scenarios, actually. First thing I want to talk about is DeAndre Hunter on the Atlanta Hawks. I bring him up because Atlanta is going to be a tax team going into the offseason, and there's no way they're paying the tax for that team. They're probably going to trade Trae Young or DeJounte Murray, one of them. I think if they could get out from DeAndre Hunter's contract, they would. And I think the Hornets would be a great situation for DeAndre Hunter. I could see, like, Dorian Finney-Smith from the Nets. I could see them going after him. You know, they need those, as I just said, those 3-and-D big wings. Like, if they strike out on Najee Marshall in free agency, even, like, take an asset to take Andrew Wiggins' contract on Golden State to help them get out from under the second apron. Like, guys like that. Jonathan Isaac for Orlando, he's non-guaranteed. I think he's $5 million guaranteed, $17 million of his contract, only $5 million of his guaranteed. So you could either trade, you could flip him for Bertans, or you could, you know, wait for him to be cut and then sign him to whatever on top of the $5 million Orlando's paying him. Like, guys like that, I really like. Like, I would love Jonathan Isaac if he's able to stay healthy for the Hornets. Just like I would DeAndre Hunter, just like I would DFS. Just like I would Andrew Wiggins. I think all those guys would be great fits for a team like this.
I tend to skew more toward the younger guys on that list, but I agree. I think Jonathan Isaacs would be nice. One of the Hawk guards, if that were to happen, and the assets the Hornets had were, you know, something that Atlanta would like would be nice. I tend to agree most of them. I wouldn't even mind like a D'Lo. Reunion D'Lo's still just 27. 28, like a stopgap point guard guy who could bridge the gap, play on ball, play off ball, you know, Work alongside a good mix, in my opinion, not defensively, but offensively, you know, between LaMelo Ball and then starting, obviously, and taking more of a lead guard role when LaMelo Ball is inevitably injured. You know, there's certain guys like there that you mentioned that I do think would be interesting. Jonathan Isaacs, again, although I think he's kind of played himself to coming back to Orlando and perfect timing to do so as well, right? You know, you mentioned Chuma Okeke. I like Alani Walker. Again, we go to Max Christie. Again, I say yes. You know, so like, there's a few of these young swingman guard types, even the forwards. You mentioned Toppin, you know, Chua. Like, there's a few guys here I think would really be a nice fit for Charlotte.
Yes, Chua would be a good one that I didn't mention.
Exactly. There you go. Exactly.
Three more guys I want to talk about in terms of trade, and then we're going to shoot it over to John. Ayo Dosunmu, with hopefully Lonzo Ball coming back to Chicago and Kobe White's emergence. I think he's more expendable. I could see him being like the off-ball guard alongside LaMelo Ball, similar to what Terry Rozier did. I would love that fit, actually. He's $7 million a year. He's cheap. And I still think there's some potential there. Brandon Ingram, who is going to get traded this offseason, almost assuredly. I don't know if the Hornets are going to give up the type of assets it'll take. I don't think it's going to take as much for Ingram as people are anticipating. And then Zach LaVine, I know the Hornets were one of the teams that were in on him earlier this year when he was being traded. I told John I didn't love it at the time because I didn't think it was worth giving any sort of resources to take on that contract. But as John just said, hey, if they're willing to spend money, maybe they don't care. They just take the contract and worry about it later. So, John, do any of these names really intrigue you as a Hornets fan to, you know, bring into the fold next year?
I'm a sucker for AU. I love AU. I think he's a great basketball player. I think he could bring something to that team. He started off so well for Chicago, and I think there's just been some development stuff that's going on in Chicago. I think he needs that change of scenery. I think he can be a good defender and a scorer. He'd be, like you said, great off ball two guard to play alongside of LaMelo. I think we're going to see a lot more of LaMelo, too. You know, I know that he's been out with the ankle injuries, but I think a lot of that, too, is that, you know, they're not going to win any games. There's no point in bringing him back and having him play through a lot of stuff anyway. So bringing somebody in there like that, they can really kind of play. They can kind of play to each other. I don't know. So, you know, they talked last year about the LaVine talks, you know, and then, like, people on Twitter are like, no, this is a for real thing. Like, they're actually seriously considering, you know, bringing in LaVine and stuff. It would be fun, right? To see him and Miles and LaMelo running on this team, you know, you know, especially depending on who they bring in as a coach. I do think that, you know, this team has a lot, especially if they bring in Charles Lee, a lot of Brooklyn Nets ties with Peterson and, you know, then Charles Lee, if they bring him in. So you could look at some of those guys from the Nets, like DFS. And I see you even have, you know, in the show notes talking about Cam Johnson or Ben Simmons or something like that. You know, I could see a move like that coming and working. But again, you know, like we keep saying, we have no idea what this front office is going to do. Like, really have no clue. We've never seen this combination of people together in Charlotte with this ownership. And it's literally a top down, like top to bottom, tear down, rebuild of this team. So I'd like to see the coaching strategy. And also, we don't even know what JJ Redick would be like as a coach if he came. Like, what is his strategy going to be? What is his team going to look like, you know, that he wants to put together? So, and how much input is he going to have on that? But, I mean, obviously, if you're Charlotte and you could bring Brandon Ingram in, you know, and you didn't have to break the bank and kill yourself to do it, you know, and give up too many assets. I don't even know, like, who are you going to give up for Brandon Ingram? You know, what does that trade even look like? But if you can bring in a player like that, you know, and still have LaMelo and Brandon Miller on the team, then, I mean, that looks pretty good, you know. He's not going to come there in free agency. You know, like, that's a guy that you're going to have to trade for. LaVine, too.
Let's say the Hornets win the lottery. And they get Alex Hard number one. You could then flip Mark Williams. You have a salary cap, so you don't even need a salary match. You flip Mark Williams. Maybe like a Trey Mann as well as he played. Maybe a Cody Martin just to give the Pelicans some wing depth. And let's say, I guess, 2 first-round picks. I mean, is that something that would intrigue you? Or is that too much? Let's say 2 top 10 protected picks, basically, first-rounders.
I mean, you got to have that conversation. That's not terrible. I mean, that's not terrible for this team. I like Mark Williams a lot. He didn't get to play a whole lot last year with the injuries and stuff. I'm not sure you couldn't play Sar beside Mark Williams either.
I mean, I like the ability. I think that you might have a Sar to stretch the floor. He doesn't seem to be afraid of taking mid-range shots, and he shoots those okay. 3s is where we really get problems. But I think you could potentially, I mean, if he's like a round covering 4, you know, develop Mark Williams as a 5. I mean, we see this work with guys like, to a lesser extent, but it's worked just as effectively between Kat and Rudy Gobert, right? Having kind of a mobile big around another one, or even to a much lesser extent, a guy like Nikola Jokic and Aaron Gordon. You know, like these 2 big lineups are in vogue now in a way that if you have one who's more mobile and able to kind of be the outside guy and one who could play more interior, I think there's different lineups where that could be deployed, where that could work. So I don't know. I'm not the biggest. Like if I get Sar, I don't think I would immediately go to moving Williams. I think Williams showed great potential. I think he was just injured, right? And also this is the second year, right? So I definitely want to see a little bit more there. And I definitely wouldn't want to trade him for the likes of Brandon Ingram. I'll do you respect, but Brandon Ingram, I think, is kind of a known commodity, and I think you kind of know the ceiling you get there. I think we saw that with New Orleans.
And another one is Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, which I don't think that's sustainable, that combo. But
oh, that's another one I meant to say, yeah.
Yeah.
Miles Turner and Pascal Siakam.
Yeah, and yeah. Same thing right outside, yep. The one thing I will note is I didn't mention Buddy Hield. We're talking about the Hornets needing shooting. I mean, that's as best as you could get. So if the Hornets wanted to do an overpay for a guy like that alongside LaMelo and Brandon Miller and whoever else, Miles Bridges and Mark Williams, that's the elite shooting you need. But otherwise, yeah, I'm pretty much, I think we did a good job covering the Hornets in terms of what they could do. It's difficult, again, because of the new ownership, because of the new front office, because we didn't know who the head coach is yet. I think we'll get a lot more clarity by Sunday when we know where they're picking in the lottery and who the coach is, because apparently they want to hire the coach before the lottery on Sunday. So, okay, Corbin, anything you would like to plug?
No, this project we're doing here, I think is great. Happy to met you, John, and do a pod with you. It's been fun. Steven, as always, look forward to continuing these. Just follow me on Twitter, on Instagram, at CorbinNBA, CorbinNBA, and catch all my content there.
You can follow John on Twitter at JohnSimpson42. We're still trying to get him to get the Twitter fingers in terms of, you know, we just completed our first season of One and Done. So I'm trying to get him to be more active social media presence. But you guys can follow me on Twitter at @_NBAGELL. That's NBAGELL. Go listen to the One and Done podcast, wherever you're listening to this podcast, for all your college basketball talk. Look on our YouTube page. We just did 2 recent interviews with Trey Towson from University of Arizona. He just transferred there. We interviewed him earlier in the year when he was at Oakland before he won Horizon Player of the Year. So check out both those interviews. Check out, we interviewed Lynn Greer II from Temple University, which is my alma mater, for my undergrad. And yeah, check those both out. Check out all the other work John and I were doing at One and Done. And Corbin and I will talk to you guys. I suppose we need to figure out our schedule. This episode's probably going to be released on Sunday before the lottery. Just how I'm staggering, because we're still a few episodes behind with how many we recorded this week. But Corbin and I will talk to you guys next episode. Thanks for listening.